Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. All right, friends, this week I got to let you know if you didn't see last week's post. Last week's program was already recorded and in the can before we got official word about the death of Alan Arkin. There was a brief moment early Friday morning where we weren't sure if it was verified or not, and decided to go on the safe side and not do it. But of course, Alan Arkin passed away last week. And if you look at his career, and you really should, if you know him just from the old man, the Little Miss Sunshine era, you should really, really go back. He is a full career. He was one of the original members of the Second City Comedy Troupe in Chicago in the 1960s. And the diversity of his films right out of the gate. I know he made his debut in That's Me from 1963. Was on a TV series called, appeared in one episode of East Side, West Side. But then right out of the gate, in 1966, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. Then Wait Until Dark as Rote. Then Inspector Clouseau. That's not every role is perfect. Then he played a deaf man in The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, played a Puerto Rican waiter in Poppy, Yossarian in Catch-22. This is from 1966 to 1970. He would then direct Little Murders, and yes, we're going through his IMDb page right now. Last of the Red Hot Lovers, Freebie and the Bean. If you want an early version of the buddy cop film, look at Freebie and the Bean with Alan Arkin and James Caan. It was directed by Richard Rush. Rafferty and the Gold Dust Twins, Hearts of the West, 7% Solution, Fire Sale, which is another film he directed, and for me, one of the funniest films ever made, Dr. Sheldon Kornpet, opposite Peter Falk in Andrew Bergman's The In-Laws from 1979. And it's a Criterion title. I'm happy about that. And then throughout the 80s, there was just some odd work. But, I mean, all of those really strong performances. And then we get into films like Simon in Improper Channels, Choo Choo in the Philly Flash, Full Moon High. Although for a lot of people my age, he'll always be the bumbling magician Schmendrick in the animated film The Last Unicorn, in that weird animated time of the late 70s, early 80s. Yes, he was Captain Invincible in The Return of Captain Invincible. So just strange stuff. Bad Medicine, Big Trouble. He reteamed with Alan Arkin. That was directed by John Cassavetes. Was Bill and Edward Scissorhands, and then started getting into, you know, he was older and was getting the kind of elder statesman roles like Edward Scissorhands, like Havana, like The Rocketeer. He's great as George Aronow in Glengarry Glen Ross, Uncle Lou in Indian Summer. That's an underappreciated one you should check out. And he also comes off the bench and does, you know, he's one of those guys, he makes a film better by his presence. Case in point, he is Anthony LaPaglia's boss who tries to pretend to be a tough TV movie precinct captain in the Mike Myers film So I Married an Axe Murderer. North, The Jerky Boys, Steel Big, Steel Little, Mother Night, Grosse Pointe Blank, 4 Days in September, Gattaca, Slums of Beverly Hills, Jacob the Liar. I mean, just America's Sweethearts, 13 Conversations About One Thing. you stick him in any type of film, and he delivers. Of course, in 2006, he won an Academy Award for Little Miss Sunshine, appeared in Firewall, and that's not really a shock. I know that's a lot of people thought that was Eddie Murphy's year. No disrespect to Eddie Murphy. I know that there was also part of a career achievement, but I was hearing stories where I believe when he died, Abigail Breslin told a lovely story. It's the scene with the little girl and grandpa, and they do the scene, and she starts to cry. And Arkin stops the scene and calls for the parents, and Abigail had to tell Alan Arkin that she was acting, and he found that very delightful. Still going through Sunshine Cleaning, Get Smart, Marley and Me. Don't watch Marley and Me, even though he's great in that. I always quote City Island because City Island was a film starring and directed by Andy Garcia. He plays a prison guard who is not telling his family that he is taking acting classes in New York City, and his instructor is played by Alan Arkin, and there's two 20-somethings doing a very in kind of intense, brooding, heavily paused scene, and he finally goes off on actors who pause. I know I'm butchering the quote, but I've lost 2 years of my life from students pausing. Stop pausing. The Muppets, Argo, which he got another nomination. The incredible Burt Wonderstone. Love the Coopers. Going in Style. Not a great film, but he gets to, you know, be the object of affection for Anne Margaret. And in 2017, that's pretty good. Dumbo, Spencer Confidential. He was one of the voices of in Minions. And, of course, not a bad way to finish up a career with the Kominsky Method. So I'm sorry this took a little bit of time, but better late than never. Yeah, nominated for The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. So, yeah, two nominations in 3 years, one for Little Miss Sunshine, and then another supporting actor nomination for Argo. So salute to Alan Arkin. I watched The In-Laws over the weekend, and hopefully you should as well. So there you go. Opening this week is a psychological chess match called The Lesson, which stars Richard E. Grant, Julie Delpy, Daryl McCormick, who I recently discovered as the young companion to Emma Thompson and Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, and Stephen McMillan, who plays the son. So Daryl McCormick plays Liam. He is a young, budding novelist who winds up getting a dream job tutoring the son of a famous novelist who's been kind of in hiding and in kind of a recluse, almost a Salinger-type situation, only much richer and much more posh. He winds up getting a job tutoring the young lad to get him into college, but along the way starts to connect with the Richard E. Grant character, J.M. Sinclair, and his wife, Helene, played by Julie Delpy. And first it's a cold basically a job. He gets to stay in the summer cottage. Sometimes he's invited to dinner, sometimes he's not. And then we get a connection between the younger writer and the older writer, and a slightly different connection between the younger writer and the older writer's wife. Some of the plot points as far as the creative process, young generation, older generation, as well as the jealous dynamics. You can see some of these plot lines coming, but it's still fun to watch the performances of Grant, who really underplays. I have seen him go over the top. Of course, I use a very old example in something like Hudson Hawk. Julie Delpy, as the film goes on, becomes much more of an integral part of the plot. She's not just the wife in this one, I assure you. But they all bounce off each other very well. There's just enough venom. It's not with a capital V. I think this is something I could get Mrs. Soucy to possibly watch because it's not as hateful as it could be about the story, with the storyline like this, as well as the performances. So if you like low-key venom or venom at a low octane, you could definitely check out The Lesson, which is opening this week. Also released this week on Kino Lorber is a documentary called Close to Vermeer, which, after watching the documentary Tim's Vermeer a few years ago, which I still adore, and I have the Blu-ray and I need to revisit it, we get a look at behind the scenes at the world's largest Vermeer exhibit, which is happening at a gallery in Amsterdam. So we get to see the curator, Vermeer experts, and the importance, not only talking about the importance of Vermeer's work, but also the being able to obtain and borrow pieces from different galleries across the country. Some galleries are generous. Some are not. We get a piece, of course, about the girl with the pearl earring. We go to New York, and there are just paintings that will not travel. There's a one painting that is kind of doubted. But we are told about the importance of his work if you don't know it already. It does feel like, at times, an infomercial for the paintings of Vermeer. The use of depth and light and shadow and the cracks in the painting and the brush strokes. This could be a good companion piece with Tim's Vermeer. And I am a sucker for documentaries about the creative process, or in this case, how to put an exhibit together. This could go with the Michelle Williams film earlier this year. So if you like Vermeer, if you like art, if you like seeing how a gallery exhibit happens, check out Close to Vermeer from Kino Lorber. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we go around the horn, there were two other films that I watched recently that were not sent to me, but they were an important part of the household, or at least in my film-going family. We returned our kid M back to Loyola for college, and the weekend before going up, I talked them into revisiting The Blues Brothers. I've joked with my kid that I showed them so many movies when they were very young, and they barely remember any of them. And that could be a film festival in and out of itself, like Ebert Fest. But they do remember chunks of The Blues Brothers, but not all of it. And since, for me, it's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Chicago film, filmed in the city. And you're never going to see a film like that in Chicago, or anywhere else for that matter, of basically, the city, the mayor, just opened a blank check and said, what do you want to do? And man, did they ever. So it was fun revisiting that with the kid. Of course, this was probably, if I remember, I was 10 when The Blues Brothers came out. And I think this was the first musical I saw in the theater. I don't recall, because Sound of Music, unless there was a reissue, and I remember seeing Snow White in the theater, but I don't think that, for me, that doesn't count. But as far as a splashy musical, that's not a bad way to start, at least in my case. And revisiting it once again, because it follows all the musical tropes that you have to have. My favorite, and I hadn't actually put this into words, because you have, yes, the section with James Brown and the section with Aretha Franklin. Never forget the performance by John Lee Hooker, Ray Charles, and, of course, the Blues Brothers themselves. But I think my favorite, at least as far as musical movie magic, is the one with Cab Calloway, because of the moment he goes on stage. Because I knew he was the singer as a kid, and I kind of figured Minnie the Moocher was his big hit, at least I was told from Dad. You know, but the whole time we see Cab Calloway's character in the dark hat and sunglasses, and then from the magic of movies, the curtain opens and he's in his old regalia from the 40s doing Minnie the Moocher. So it just makes me giggle every time I watch him do that. So anyway, it was fun to revisit that with the family. And then going to Chicago and helping drop the kid off, and I got to see my dear, dear friend Laura Jansen and her wonderful husband Greg. And Laura and I have had a tradition since the 90s of eating too much, not so much drinking too much this time around, and watching really bad cinema. And this time around, I got to inflict the 1985 journalism drama Perfect, directed by James Bridges. Stars John Travolta as a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine. And man, Rolling Stone is all over this. Jan Wenner is in this, even though he does not play himself, but he does play the publisher. Anyway, Travolta is a Rolling Stone reporter who, there's two stories going on. There's one involving a businessman who is in trouble with the law as far as, that's not the most serious part, really. Will Travolta's character give up his notes to the courts or not? The other part, of course, is the splashier one, is he's working on a piece about how health clubs become the new singles bars of the 1980s. and he falls for really serious, intense aerobics instructor played by Jamie Lee Curtis. You also have Mary Lou Henner and Lorraine Newman as a couple of regulars who hang out at the club. But this is a film, as Laura said several times over the weekend, for a film that has aerobics, this should be way more fun than it actually is. It clocks in at 2 hours, way too long, takes itself way too seriously, wants to be the All the President's Men of the 1980s. And I think part of the branding of Rolling Stone in this film, I know Rolling Stone wasn't crazy about the film Where the Buffalo Roam, which was the unofficial fictitious account of or biopic of Hunter Thompson with Bill Murray as Thompson, and the representation of the magazine in that one, I'm sure. So the fact that this one, I don't know if they produced it, but man, they were all over it. I'm sure they shot at their printing presses, and of course you had the publisher sort of playing himself. But there's also the aerobic scenes, which go on way too long. And there is this probably the funniest part is seeing Travolta in really tight and loose shorts at the same time. There's something flaying around. That's a word. But the scene that he works out for the first time, and he's making eye contact with Jamie Lee Curtis's character the whole time, and oh yeah, aerobics equals sex. Okay, we got it. Just hammers it really hard over the head. And as I mentioned, it should be more fun. It should be splashy. And there's, you know, the usual 80s garb and hair, which is also very entertaining. But Jamie Lee Curtis in this film reminds me of Demi Moore in Striptease, where they should be having way more fun than they actually are. It just looks like a very intense, serious experience. And this could have been 90 minutes and a lot looser, and it just takes itself so damn seriously. So, but man, it's a trip. And if you want to see, and there is a gif of Travolta working out in that film, you've been warned. And you've also been warned about the closing credits. So anyway, the treatment of journalism ethics is really silly, and the change in heart with a few characters in this also are ludicrous. So yeah, revisiting perfect. That was fun. Okay, let's go around the horn, and then we'll find out what you've been watching. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, they have a triple feature this weekend at the Tibbs. Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, Elemental, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse on Screen 1. Screen 2, Joyride and the Blackening. Screen 3, Insidious, The Red Door, and No Hard Feelings. And Screen 4, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny and The Boogeyman. That's over at the Tibbs. Over at the Skyline this weekend is Indiana Jones, as well as Elemental. Elemental comes first that time around, so that is over at the Skyline Drive-In. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin on Tuesday, July 11th at 10 a.m., Summer Break Series, The Road to El Dorado. And then July 14th and 15th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Further Adventures of Ma and Pa Kettle. Tuesday, July 18th at 10 a.m. is a part of the Summer Break Series. And I don't recall if they added this in or if this was already on the schedule. And if it is, what timing? The Last Unicorn. Of course, we mentioned Alan Arkin is one of the voices in this, as well as Jeff Bridges, Mia Farrow, Angela Lansbury, Christopher Lee. It's actually Nathan Raven wrote about this recently in Nathan Raven's Happy Place. One of the better voice casts for an animated film there from 1982. July 21st and 22nd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Manchurian Candidate. All of that is at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. This week on Golden Globus, it's Griffmas in July, from 1990, Peacemaker, not The Peacemaker. This is with Robert Forster, not George Clooney. So check that out over at Golan Globus Theater. All right, friends, let's grab a pencil and let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you got to watch some movies that are good, that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start on Twitter with your Canadian girlfriend writing, "Just saw Maniac Cop. Cops, drug smuggling, demons, magic, blowing up." Yep. As well as Witchboard, Batman Returns, and Fighting Back. Thank you, Canadian girlfriend. WFYI's own Pam Elliott writes, Rocky V. AMC was airing a Rocky marathon on the 4th, and my dad and I did not remember seeing it the first time around, so we got caught up in it. What a great series. And story of Stallone's beginnings. Inspirational. Notice it didn't say a whole lot about Rocky V, because it's really bad. And Stallone's even dismissed it. I just saw an interview recently where, yeah, he would have given it negative points on a scale of 1 to 10. So, but I'm glad you got to watch the series. There you go. All right, over to Facebook. We start with Eric, who rewatched No Country for Old Men. Amanda went to the library and she picked up 5th of July. Happy 5th of July to those who celebrate. If you've not seen this, it's worth checking out. Richard Thomas, Jeff Daniels, Susie Kurtz. I got to play Weston for one performance and then got to be, I was the AD in a production at the Ball State University back in 1993. She also went to the library and rented Born on the 4th of July, 1776, Independence Day, and Yankee Doodle Dandy. There's a quartet. Life Itself, which was my top film that year, the great documentary about Roger Ebert. Apollo 13, Red Joan, Midnight Lace, and Empire of the Sun. Thank you, Amanda. Robert Muggy writes, Howard Hawks, A Hell of a Good Life, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, The Barefoot Contessa, the film, not the cooking show, and rewatch the amazing Swedish film Songs from the Second Floor. Thank you, Robert. David writes, Wings from 1927 and Dr. Strangelove. JJ writes, Asteroid City, Megan, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, saying we enjoyed it, the 2011 version of The Thing, which he deemed fine, as well as The Outsiders. Eric, his first views this week, Joe Dante's delightful Matinee, Long Live John Goodman. Yeah, not enough people have watched Matinee, Joe. I'm with you on that. And speaking of split stories, obviously, the John Goodman part is the most fun. The coming of age story is okay. It's not bad. But yeah, it's kind of Joe Dante's Ed Wood. And there's nothing wrong with that. His other first view, The Beatles Get Back on Disney Plus. The rewatches, When Harry Met Sally, 20 Million Miles to Earth, Deep Impact, and Peter Bogdanovich's directorial debut, Targets, which I'm now convinced is one of the best first features ever made. And yes, there's a Criterion sale, and that's a part of it. So thank you, Eric. Rachel writes the Greta Gerwig version of Little Women, Charade, and Toy Story 2. Jamie writes Flubber, Dr. Doolittle, The Loud House Movie, The Beverly Hillbillies, Around the World in 80 Days, the 2004 version, Miss Congeniality, Bad Moms, Crazy Rich Asians, Pirates of the Caribbean, On Stranger Tides, as well as Dead Men Tell No Tales. Jamie accidentally cut and paste hers twice. That's all right. Carrie writes Primal, which was probably bad, but I should see how it ended, as well as Time After Time and Meatballs. And finally, Lou Harry writes Far From the Madding Crown, the stage version, Inherit Vice, No Hard Feelings, and Asteroid City. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some movies that are good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Serpentine! What? Serpentine!
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Thank you, Alan.
This guy's a crook?
They're all crooks down here. At least this one don't make any bones about it.
Welcome to Tijuana! Hit the dirt!
Is he dead?
He's alive. He's putting on a hell of an act, ain't he? Roll over!
They're taking off without us!
That's standard procedure. What? We gotta make a run for his car.
We'll never make it.
We'll never make a lion here. That's for damn sure. Are you ready?
No. No, I'm ready.
Serpentine! What?
Serpentine! Serpentine! Jump!
Where the hell are the keys?
Are you kidding me?
Out of the car.
They must be in his pocket.
I'll get him.
No! I'll get him. I'd rather die running than be left here alone.
Shell! You don't know what you're saying.
I can't take it anymore. The idea of you out there dead and me all alone back here with the smoke and the bullets. I can't take it.
Are you serious?
I can't stay here.
Okay, but remember, Serpentine!
Absolutely.
What a guy.
You're dead, right? Good.
Pero apúntele, no más disparen, hombre.
Serpentine, Shell! Serpentine!